This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio or at venues around the city, and we listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes, and you might even find your next favorite artist or band. If you like what you hear, please make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with John Oates. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Paul Cavalcante at WFUV. Paul, I'm a diehard Hall & Oates fan, and it was so cool to have John Oates in the studio.
I'm with you.
He's back with new music. This is his 9th solo album. So we've got some new music, and he also took us back in time and played one from the vault. Talk to me about this conversation with John Oates. You've talked to him before, haven't you?
Oh, yes. We've known each other for a long time. The first time that I met Hall & Oates together, they came to a studio session at a radio station that doesn't exist anymore called CD 101.9, and it was co-owned by a company that also had two other stations, Hot 97 and Kiss FM.
Oh, yeah.
So we're in the studio. Hall & Oates have their acoustics. We're doing our conversation, and everybody from the other stations are like craning their necks in the glass. And the next thing you know, they came back the next day to do the other radio station. Now, they were in because they were booked for our holiday Christmas show.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a scene, but they were very gracious, and they came back and did it. And because it was the first time that I had a chance to pick the brains of both gentlemen, we talked deeply about classic soul. And soul music was, you know, the name of the game in all three of these stations that I'm describing. So they felt very much at home, and we're all deep record people. So bonding on that level was great. And I've always found, John in particular, dealing with him solo, to have a great generosity of spirit. He's a guy, and I've had Daryl as a solo guest as well. They're very proud of their heritage. They've gone their separate ways, but what they created will always be a part of all of us.
Yeah, 100%. And what is the first song that we're going to hear from John Oates in this session?
Yeah, and it's called Real Thing Going On. It is the result of a new friendship. I don't know about long-standing collaboration to come, but we'll take things one at a time. New friendship with Devin Gefelian, an artist that we love here at WFUV. So Real Thing Going On is the fruit of their labor, and John Oates strips it down and gives it to us as a solo session here for FUV Live.
Ain't no doubt about it, we got a real thing going on. Well, it'll be okay, there's nothing in a way. It's a chance we got to take it with me, baby. Ain't no doubt about it, we got a love trip going on. Days are turning gray, clouds are bringing rain. You can call my name, be there for you, baby. Girl, it's been so long. Had enough of being on my own. I said I never felt so strong. Well, is there something we can do? Could this be a me and you? And I said ain't no doubt about it, we got a real thing going on. When days are turning gray, clouds are bringing rain, you can call my name, be there for you, baby. Ain't no doubt about it, we got a love trip going on. When days are turning gray, clouds are bringing rain, you can call my name, be there for you, baby. Open up and try. You can't say what's ever on your mind. I said, let's just slow down time. I said, ooh, 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 ooh. I said, ba 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 ba. doubt about it, yeah. I said, ain't no doubt about it, yeah.
The song is Real Thing Going On. The real deal is Mr. John Oates. Back here at 90.7 WFUV with yours truly, Paul Cavalcante. That sounded so good.
Well, thank you, Paul. We've chatted over the years, and it's always a pleasure talking with you.
You've come up with a wonderful new song that has a great backstory because you've really worked closely with somebody that we love here at WFUV, Devin Gafelian.
Oh, yeah. Devin. I love Devin. Fellow Philadelphian. And Devin and I met in Nashville. And I knew a little bit about him. We were on a show together, a kind of a, you know, an invite show. And I really love his spirit. I've loved his amazing voice and his vibe and his personality. And we just talked backstage and we really hit it off. And I had a sense that we could do something together. I didn't know what it was going to be. We actually wrote a song called Mending that we released prior to the album. Actually a year ago. And that was our first collaboration together. And it was seamless and fun. And I was really, you know, I just thought, you know, this, we definitely had something going on there. This new one, Real Thing Going On, was interestingly inspired by my cello player, a fellow named Nathaniel Smith, who plays cello in my acoustic group. And during soundcheck one day, he was just messing around. And he started playing this really funky groove. He's not a classical cello player. He can be, but he's really more of a groove player. And he started doing this thing that sounded like it was like, bonk, 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 da-gonk. And I was like, oh man, what's that? And I said, hold on a second. I said, keep playing that. And I took a video of him playing it.
Was he bowing or
no,
plucking?
No, he was plucking. It was pizzicato, you know, and he was playing. It was almost like a bass part. And I said, man, that's awesome. I said, let's write a song. And he's not really much of a songwriter, but you know, he wants to be. And I said, well, you know, you and I will work this up. And then after I start playing around with it, I thought to myself, I think we need Devin. I think Devin will complete the picture on this thing. And I brought Devin in and the three of us wrote it together. So it was great. And here again, seamless, fun, easy. And that's usually the hallmark of a good song.
Well, I've heard the record. It's got a lot going on. It's a really, you know, kind of ear candy in terms of the arrangements and all the sounds that you give us. But today you're here just with your guitar. And I think that as we've said more than once to each other about the music we admire and about the music you've created through the years, the hallmark of a great song is how well it stands up to either just guitar or just piano. And this one sounds just fine.
Well, I hope I didn't disappoint you with the acoustic version. Yeah, here again, it's early in the morning. I'm trying my best to not disappoint. These songs are definitely groove-oriented songs. They do sound better with a rhythm section, but if you can pull it off on an acoustic guitar and, you know, and in its most basic form, then it's usually the acid test of whether it works or not.
And then there's this other kind of, I call it the eye contact thing, where you do a stripped-down version of a song and you're establishing a new kind of intimacy. This has now become almost like a private conversation. It's less theatrical, and it's very revealing, and it must be tough for a performer because it puts you in a vulnerable place. You know, you're going to reveal more.
There's nowhere to hide. You know, there's nowhere to hide. You can't hide behind the sound of the big band, the drum kit, the keyboards, you know, guitar parts, whatever you might have, background singers. No, it's all about revealing the essence of the song. Absolutely.
Well, I think we certainly learn that lesson, and this applies to a lot of music from the 1980s. When you go back to, you know, some of the classic songs from the 80s in the Hall & Oates catalog, a lot of production was going on, but you can extract them from that and they stand on their own. And I find that that's the case with many songs from that era. I struggle a little bit with the way pop music is today. It's a lot more formulaic, and sometimes I'll say, I'm not quite sure if I hear a song in there. I hear a record, all right, but I'm not sure if I'm hearing a song.
I like what you just said, and I fully agree with what you just said. I think there's a, you know, maybe the average person doesn't really discern the difference between a song and a record. In the old days, you know, you had to have the song first. The production was what was the icing on the cake. The production was what turned the raw song into a record. Now, in the modern world, the production is part and parcel of the song itself. And many times, the production is the writing of the song. It actually is the writing. without the production, you really don't have a song. So the world has changed. The digital world and the technology that's available to recording artists has enabled them to do things that, you know, we couldn't do back in the old days, which is cool because I embrace that as well. But it's important to remember what remember the source, you know, and that's I'm still old school enough to want to approach my music that way. I want to make sure the song stands on its own, and then we'll dress it up.
You know, everybody is so well educated on so many levels, including the technical aspect, because we live technical lives. I mean, sure. We live with a Star Trek communicator in our pockets. And I always like to say, you know, you could make Dark Side of the Moon on your iPhone. Mm-hmm. We have the technology sitting there, but they didn't. Pink Floyd or the Beatles or whatever had to go to Abbey Road and they had to open themselves up to, you know, the EMI guys in the white coats. You in the early days would have gone, whether it was Philly or LA or New York, into studios with the old mics on the booms and the engineers doing their thing. And you were really dependent on a producer or an arranger. And we'll talk a little bit about the great Arif Mardan and, mm-hmm. and how, you know, sure. your music to this day is reflecting that.
Yes.
But there was a trust there. And that's a kind of vulnerability that allows you as an artist to open yourself up in a different way. And maybe we're a little too isolated, you know, today from that.
Well, I think the modern artist who grew up with this in the digital world doesn't know the difference. And it's just, you know, it's their reality. And they're going to make the music that, you know, that expresses what they want to express the way they want to express it. I you can't go back in time, but I will say that, and here again, I can only speak from my own point of view, but I still make records exactly the same. And you mentioned Arif Mardan. It's perfect segue, because I think everything I needed to know about record making, I learned in the two albums that Daryl and I made with him at Atlantic Records back in the early 70s. I still approach my recording sessions in the exact same way that we did Abandoned Luncheonette. Arif, you know, basically surrounded Daryl and I with the best studio musicians in New York City at the time. All the greats, you know, Bernard Purdy and Ralph, just amazing players. I mean, I can't even name them all. And he handpicked the players for the particular moment and that song because he knew them so well and he knew what they would bring to the recording session. Now in Nashville, bringing up to the modern time, When I first got to Nashville, one of the things I learned very early on was that Vince Gill even said to me, he said, when you're producing a song in Nashville, it's almost like being the director of a movie. You're not just picking the best guitar player, because Lord knows there's hundreds of them, or the best bass player, or the best drummer. It's who's the exact right player for that moment and that song to really serve the song.
And it's because you're living in an industry town. And unlike New York or L.A., you're not sharing with a lot of other industries. Music is it in Nashville. So, yeah, you're a director and you're going out there and hiring mm-hmm. a cast that's going to work
right.
for every single.
And once, you know, after having lived there for now 15 years, my virtual Rolodex is deep. So, you know, if I want a slide guitar player, I can pick from a few of them and I know exactly the right one for that moment, or pedal steel or drummer or so on and so forth.
And how is that, by the way, with the back and forth? Like, you still go to Colorado, right?
Yeah, we still have our house in Colorado. And, you know, we like to spend as much time as we can there. But the reality is we live in Nashville and I'm thrilled to be there. I mean, it's not called Music City for nothing. It's the real deal. And, you know, if people only realize how much music comes out of there beyond country music, R&B, pop. So much pop comes out of Nashville that people aren't aware of. But really, you can, I mean, I was in the coffee shop the other day and, there was like a heavy metal band in there, you know. You'd be surprised at the amount of music that's happening there.
John Oates talking to us about some new music. We heard a new song called Real Thing Going On. It's a collaboration with Devin Gafilian. You are, as we were talking about in the old days, working with people who help shape and hone your sound. You're kind of like the elder, the mentor, in a way, to a generation of people who will flock to you and say, you know, share the knowledge.
Yeah.
And yet they're infusing you with some newness and pushing you to, you know, to your own limits. So let's talk about another song which you're prepared to do for us live here at FUV called A Ways Away, and another collaborative effort within the new record Oats.
I wrote this song with a guy named Jed Hughes. Jed is an Australian who is at one of the top session guitarists in Nashville. first call session player. Very versatile, and he's a songwriter as well. He and I met through some mutual friends, and I was just a, you know, basically a fan of his songwriting and his guitar playing. And it was kind of funny because we were both so busy that we couldn't get together. We said, you know, we both agreed we'd love to write a song together. And every time we checked our calendar, it was like, well, next week? No, I can't do it. Oh, how about 2 weeks from now? I don't know. What are you doing in October? You know, kind of thing. And it kept going like that. Finally, in a conversation with him, we finally picked a date where it seemed like we were going to be able to get together. And I just casually said, well, it's a ways away, but we're going to, you know, we'll make it work. And I went, a ways away? What a great title for a song. And I said to him on the phone call, I said, look, I know we're not going to get together for a while, but when we do, let's write a song called A Ways Away. And he loved the idea, and that's what we did.
All right, we'll do it now. Here's John Oates once again in Studio A, live at 90.7 WFUV.
It's hard to stay close enough to me. Talk, 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 talking about the way things used to be. Those heavy mornings just keep coming, they keep coming. We'll cross the finish line, yeah, if we just keep running, running. I hear the words come flying by, but I can't hear a thing you're saying. If you and I ain't winning, baby, why do we keep on playing? Cause it's never black or white, it's just a million shades of gray. We're a ways away, oh yeah. We're a ways away, just a ways away. Just a ways away, just a ways away. We're a ways away, oh yeah. We're a ways away, just a ways away, just a ways away. Let's bring it back into the room. Let's break it down and put us back into those sweet memories. Keep coming, they keep coming. We'll cross the finish line, yeah, if we just keep running, running. Maybe time will tell on what will be. I can't imagine there could be an end to you and me. Cause it's never black or white, it's just a million shades of gray. We're a ways away, oh yeah. We're a ways away, just a ways just a ways just a ways away. We're a ways away. We're a ways away, just a ways just a ways away. Baby, just a ways, just a ways, just a ways away. Sweet memories keep coming, baby. Sweet memories keep coming, yeah. Way, if you and I ain't winning, baby, why do we keep on playing? Yeah. Just a ways, just a ways, just a ways away. We're a ways away.
A A Ways Away is a new song by our old friend John Oates visiting Cavalcade here at 90.7 WFUV. Paul Cavalcante with you. John, A Ways Away is all about perspective, and I have a few benchmarks of perspective that I'd like to lay out in years that are evenly, more or less evenly spaced. They land on the O's or the fives. All right, so here we go. We're going to land in 1975, 1980, and then again in 1985.
Okay.
In your amazing career. So I'm going to do that in reverse order.
Oh,
1985. This year, we observed a big anniversary for Live Aid.
Mm-hmm.
You were part of it.
Yes.
And also, I think it was close enough for jazz around that time, the recording of We Are the World.
Yes.
By the way, that documentary show, I hope you had a chance to see it about the making of it. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So can you just give us some color about those events?
Wow. Well, where do you start? Well, we can start with Live Aid. We Are the World came before Live Aid, so maybe we should start with We Are the World. I think it was very clever that Michael Jackson, Lionel Richie, and Quincy Jones chose the night of the American Music Awards in Los Angeles to do that recording session. Because, in those days, there weren't a million different award shows. There was basically the Grammys and the American Music Awards. So everyone who is pretty much anybody in pop music was at the American Music Awards. So you had a captive audience, so to speak. And after the award show, they took everyone in limos over to this recording studio, and we all got in there, and it was great. There was no managers and agents hanging around, so everybody kind of let their hair down. It was a very friendly vibe, and then we got to work, and I remember I had Bob Dylan was right here in front of me, right off my one shoulder, and then Ray Charles was right there, and a lot of times, unfortunately, I probably let a lot of really important moments kind of slip by, but I didn't let that moment
You had a
slip
moment
by.
To pinch yourself.
I did. I was very hyper aware of what was happening and who and how it was happening. And it was really, really, it was pretty amazing to be in that room. So that was, that was that. And
then Live Aid.
Well, Live Aid, they did it, obviously they did the London version, and then the American version was going to be in Philly. Of course, Daryl and I were kind of at the top of the pop world at the time. We were asked to do it. Mick Jagger had done a solo album, but didn't really have a band. And so he reached out to us and asked if we would back him. I was going to say no. No, I'm just kidding. We said yes, of course.
Like a Rolling Stone,
yes,
you were.
Yes, of course. you don't get that chance very often. And we also brought out Eddie Kendrick and David Ruffin, who are the lead singers from The Temptations, who are our teenage idols, who we had done a show at the Apollo Theater even recently as well. And we did a kind of a reprise of a Temptations medley with them, which was, of course, great, amazing. And then Mick came out and brought Tina Turner out. So, yeah, it was an incredible moment in Philadelphia with about 80,000 people, a simulcast around the world for the first time. I believe historically, I think it was the first time a concert was ever simulcast around the world, which is pretty, pretty amazing for the time.
So I said we'd move back. We did 85. Now 80, just a brief okay. stop. I want to give credit to the record because it was my first year really of being a DJ here on FUV, Spinning Voices.
There was
something about that album that arced the Hall & Oates story.
100%.
Because you had some experimental records leading up to it, War Babies and this, and there were, an odd single here and there. But now here's a record where you are a lead singer on a couple of big songs. The single, of You've Lost That Loving Feeling, How Does It Feel to Be Back? You're really, toe-to-toe co-writing with Daryl some of the big songs as well. And this is really, I think, where you gel in a way that just takes Hall & Oates to, the superstar level. And this is a moment of reflection on that, looking at 1980.
Well, I'm glad you said that because you're right. I think that, it's a complex story that leads up to the Voices album. But basically, the decade of the 70s, Daryl and I were trying to find ourselves artistically. We did all sorts of things. We did a folk album. We did an acoustic R&B album. We did a heavy metal experimental album with Todd Rundgren. We did. We went to L.A. and recorded with the L.A. session players. All of those experiences were leading up. We didn't know it was leading where it was leading, but what it ended up happening, it led us to Voices. And we had been using producers all through the 70s, which was the paradigm with artists. You know, an artist would have a producer as kind of the babysitter to make sure that things were going well for the record company. But by the time we got to the 80s, and the last producer we had was David Foster, believe it or not. And I remember we recorded in L.A. a little bit, and then we came back to New York to record. And I remember David Foster during the Ecstatic album, which was the album that preceded the Voices album. He said in the middle of the record, he said, "Why am I here?" He goes, "You guys are making this record yourself." And that was the light bulb. And I went, "Yeah, we are. And that's what we're going to do." And so the very next album was Voices. And I think the thing that, you know, you picked up on was that Daryl and I produced that ourselves. So we did it exactly the way we wanted to do it. And that led to the tremendous success, commercial run of the 80s, because we were making our own records the way we wanted to make it. And we were vilified, you know, for maybe not doing it earlier, but you know, definitely it was all of a sudden, it was right.
Yeah, as they say these days, the only way out of it was through it. You had to experience what you did up to that point.
We were building the foundation for what would become the 80s sound of Hall & Oates, but we didn't know we were doing it, but we did it.
So we're going back 85 to 80, and there's one more opportunity that we have for you as our studio guest to sing a song for us, and we are dialing to 1975.
I like the way you're doing this, by the way. I see the method in your madness.
But there's a little bit of a record geek thing that I'm going to have to lay out before you sing one more song for us, and that's the fact that this particular song, I can't say it was a hit twice, because it was a hit. It was a big hit exactly in 1975. We're talking about the song She's Gone. It got re-released in an edited version, because now what had happened is this record from a few years earlier gained traction. If I have it right, Hall & Oates has moved to RCA. And so now the other label, Atlantic, is going, hold on a second, this Sarah Smile thing is blowing up. We got to compete with it. So you guys are label-wise competing with each other on the charts in like the summer of 75.
That's right. Exactly right. She's Gone was, we wrote it in, I can tell you exactly when we wrote it. We wrote it in January of 1972 and recorded it on the Abandoned Luncheonette album in 73. We released it as the first single, and I think it went into the top 40, maybe. What happened right after that was a group called Tavares picked it up and did their own version, and it became a number one R&B record. Well, of course, Atlantic Records said, well, wait a minute, let's re-release the original again in an edited version, exactly the way you described it. And that went into the top 20, but it still wasn't really a big hit. And then the third time's the charm, I guess, after Sarah Smile and the momentum from that single, it finally went into I think it peaked out at number two. Very interesting. About 5 or 6 years ago, I finally got a gold record for that.
What took you so long?
It only took 50 years.
I guess the delivery guy couldn't find your address.
Maybe
there was,
maybe
there was
so.
A brown truck circling for
maybe
weeks.
Maybe so, yeah.
Well, it's great backstory about how records were made and all the collaborative people and you know, the story of the charts.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the oral tradition we're passing down here. The song that broke Hall & Oates and at the same time broke the mold, a whole new direction for a great partnership and a great way to round out a wonderful visit with you sharing your new music and bringing us back to the old days, John Oates. I'm going to say She's Gone, He's Gone, we'll go there. Hall & Oates is functionally not happening, but the music belongs to us forever. And you certainly seem to be in that kind of a place where it's your legacy, it's your heart and soul for a lifetime. And, you know, you guys have chosen to go in different directions. Never say never, but, you know, I guess you must now really know how the Beatles feel. Are they ever getting back together again?
Well, listen, you know, Daryl and I have agreed to, you know, amicably go our separate ways business-wise and artistically, and we're both pursuing other things. And, you know, after a 50-year partnership, which is way, way longer than most, you know, I think we have every right to do that, and I'm happy that that we're able to do it. And, you know, for me, there's a time stamp on creativity, and I see it, unfortunately, around me. I see, you know, people I know, contemporaries, falling by the wayside for any number of reasons. And, you know, I can still sing and play. I can still think. I can still move around. I want to make sure I get the most of it. And this is my, you know, my, I mean, I've done 9 solo albums since 2000. And so I've, you know, it's not like I just woke up one morning and rolled out of bed and said, I'm going to do something new. This is something I've been preparing for 20 years, believe it or not. And now I'm fully, you know, fully invested and fully committed to seeing it through. It's wonderful.
Well, in the candlelit past, in another era, there was a song that went, they can't take that away from me. And they certainly can't take any of your amazing life experience with and without Hall & Oates as a solo artist who's really committed to taking your time to get it just right.
Exactly.
And you've arrived at that moment with Oates.
Hey, thank
and you.
You
have our heartiest congratulations. Fast forward to 2025, and I guess I, you know, we'll take the opportunity to dub this She's Gone 25. This is John Oates solo in Studio A with a song that is very much a part of us.
Everybody's high on consolation. Everybody trying to tell me what is right for me. Yeah. My daddy tried to bore me with a sermon. Well, you know it's plain to see that they can't comfort me. Sorry, Charlie, for the imposition. I believe I got the strength. Carry on, I say, need a drink and a quick decision. Well, you know it's up to me. I know what will be, and she's gone. Oh, I better learn how to face it. She's gone. Oh, I. I pay the devil to replace her. She's gone. What went wrong? Up in the morning, look in the mirror. You know that I'm worn as a toothbrush hanging in the stand. In the stand, I say, face ain't looking any younger. Baby, now I can see love taking her toll on me. And she's gone. Oh, I better learn how to face it. She's gone. Oh, I pay the devil to replace her. She's gone. What went wrong? Think I'll spend eternity in the city, babe. Let the carbon and monoxide choke my thoughts away. Pretty bodies help dissolve memories. Say they could never be what she was to me. Oh, yeah. She's gone. I better learn how to face it. She's gone. Oh, I pay the devil to replace her. Gone. I better learn how to face it. She's gone. Oh, I pay the devil to replace her, babe. I better believe that she's, oh, baby, she's gone.
That was John Oates performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to John for joining us in our studio and to Command Shift Ice Cream for Dinner, Shorefire PR, and Jared Oslander. thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Matthew Ellersick, and Sage Rossetti. Our WFUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producer for this episode was Liv Grant. Megan Suma is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV live sessions whenever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions on WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host, Paul Cavalcante.